ماہِ محرم کی پڑی ہے دوں مجنت میں شہِ بے کس کے ماتم کی لگے گی اب چھری خیر نسا کی دی دینم کی کہوں تاسی رکھیا تم کو شہ مزلو مکے گم کی علی نکلے گے جنت سے نبی چھوڑے گے تربت کو اٹھائے گا یہ غم مرکد سے کھاتوں دے قیامت کو یہ اشرا ہے وہ اشرا جس میں زہرا خاک اڑائے گی جہاں پر تازیہ نہ دیکھے گی بہت آنسو بہائے گی بہاؤ اش کا تم سر پیٹتے شیرے خدا آئے بطولائی حسن آئے جناب مصطفیٰ آئے یہ اس کا غم ہے دنیا میں نہیں چہلم ہوا جس کا یہ اس کا غم ہے جو مارا گیا دو روز کا بھوکا یہ اس کا غم ہے جس کو تا بچہلم بھی فلک رویا یہ اس کا غم ہے جس کا بے کفن گاڑا گیا لاشا پھر ایک جا تو ماں ان روزوں میں رکت کی جو ہوتی ہے محمد پیٹتے ہیں فاطمہ کی روح روتی ہے پہن کر ماتم ملبو سزہرا بارس اریان صفے ماتم میں آ کر بیٹھتی ہے بے کسو نالن میں لینے آئی ہوں اس بے کس دل کی رکھا پرسا عزادارو مجھے دو رو रोकर शब्बीर का पुरुषा मदीन वाले मोहम्मद सलावत محمد وآل محمد صلوات السلام علیکم برادرز اینڈ سسٹرز بیفور وی اسٹارٹ ود دی ریسٹ آف دی پروگرام جسٹ سم لیٹ یو نو سم ہاؤس کیپنگ رولز ہیئر ایز یو نو وی ہیو اے لاٹ آف اٹینڈنس ڈیورنگ محرم ڈیز سو آن دا سکھ ٹیمپل بارڈر ود دا پارکنگ از اسپیسیفکلی اسٹرکٹلی reserved for lady drivers only. We have had too many instances where moms with small kids and babies have to carry their stuff and the baby's stuff from the gents side to the lady side because us gents have parked over there and they cannot park anymore there. So please, if you see anybody parking there, remind them. It is very important. I've had too many complaints from those ladies' side, some of them elderly too, and they have to walk around too. So please make sure you don't park on the south border of our center here. They're specifically for ladies only. The program at the center will be starting at 7 p.m. every evening for the first 10 nights, except on Saturday and Sunday. We will start at Awal time at Maghrib and will be ending with Niaz. Full program for the first 12 days are now on the hotline recording, on our website, and keeping connected. Also, when you do come in, I would really highly encourage you to please come and sit as much front as you can. That will stop me to ask you every time to come please forward because a lot of people jam up at the back and it's hard for people to come in.
We know when you study history, and when you look at how the tragic event of Karbala transpired, and how every community that came after Karbala, how they made it a point, not on their own, but rather on the inspiration of the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, to keep this legacy alive. That from the time of the martyrdom of Aba Abdullah and the family and companions, that this gathering that we have tonight, this majlis, this commemoration of this supreme sacrifice, is something which has begun, which was begun by the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon all of them. And it continues through these 13 centuries. And it will continue up until the zuhur of our 12th Imam. And I'm sure it will continue long through the advent of our Imam, and it will continue until the Day of Judgment. And we are fortunate to be of those who are in this gathering tonight, wherever we may be, and wherever gathering we are in the world, to be able to take part in such a magnificent occasion to mark this supreme sacrifice of the family of the Prophet. And for this we give Allah thanks, and we thank Allah that we are able to do whatever it is that we can do to keep alive the legacy of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. It's interesting that when you study this phenomenon of the majalis, of these gatherings, these sessions that we have, wherever in the world that they may be, that as history has gone on, and you can read about this for yourself, but you see that even when governments in various times and localities try to stop the majalis, they try to stop the gathering to commemorate Aba Abdullah, that they failed. There were times in history, I'm sure we've heard about them, we've read about them. Maybe some of us lived this period within our own history, that the gathering in Karbala was prohibited. People were not allowed to go to the grave of Aba Abdullah. People were not allowed to show emotion at the grave of Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. But we see how times change, how Allah even promises in the Quran that those who were oppressed at one time, those who had been kept down, that a time will come when tables will turn, when systems will be overturned, and one day those who are oppressed will become the inheritors of the earth. And those who were at the top of society, at the echelons of the world powers, that they will have to submit to an authority that they were once trying to quell and to crush. And this was a fact, and this is a fact in the last 1300 years. And our gathering tonight, and our gathering for the next 11, 12 nights, will be a testament to the fact that the martyrs of Karbala live on. That when Allah promises, and Allah's promise, as we know, is true when He tells us that do not presume that those who have been killed in the way of Allah, that they are dead. Know that they are alive, receiving sustenance from their Lord. But we do not perceive and understand and comprehend that one of the manifestations of the life of the shuhada, one of the manifestations of what it means to have that life, is these gatherings in and of itself, that we are able to gather and remember and recount an event which 13 centuries ago transpired. And perhaps those young men and women and those old men and women who are on the battlefield, they probably had no clue that 1300 years later a community would gather in a country named Canada and would be remembering each and every one of those individuals. And this is a testament to the power of Sayyid al-Shuhada. And this is a testament to our love and devotion and commitment to the Muhammad and Ali Muhammad alayhim wassalatu wassalam. One more salawat upon Muhammad and Ali Muhammad. The day of Ashura, as we know, was a day of tragedy, a day of grief, and a day of sorrow. And obviously, as we begin these majalis, and we will build up to that day. But one of the things that struck me when I was thinking about how to introduce the topic that we will be discussing over these next 10 nights together, and to try to unravel for the betterment of all of us, because we all need a level of advice and admonition, myself included, is that how was it possible that an army is amassed in the desert of Karbala of not 1,000, not 5,000, not 10,000, but in excess of 30,000 soldiers are stationed, are gathered together. They're equipped to the teeth with military weaponry, with armaments, with all of the cavalry that they need. Not to fight an army of an equivalent size, but to fight an army, if you would call it that, a group of 100 some odd individuals. When you look at it from a purely physical point of view, it doesn't make sense. What was it that these 72 or 118 individuals possessed? What did they have with them that made Ibn Ziyad and his leader, the cursed Yazid, have to amass an army of 30,000 individuals? They definitely knew that these men and women were not armed with modern weaponry of that time. They didn't have soldiers waiting in ambush. They didn't have weaponry to counter an attack. But really, when I look at it, and this is what we want to elaborate on these nights, is they had something much more unique. They had something much more powerful. They had something which you can't go to a store and buy. You can't Google it. You can't, you know, put your finger on it and say that is what they had and go and buy it in a store. They had the weapon of iman. They had the weapon of true devotion and faith and commitment. They had the weapon of commitment and devotion to the imam of their time and to Allah and to the Prophet. Otherwise, why would 30,000 people be needed to crush this so-called rebellion of 72 some odd individuals? It wasn't a fear of weapons, it was a fear of iman, a fear of the faith that these people had. And inshallah, what I want to do over these nights is try to unravel from one of the supplications we have, a dua that has been taught to us by none other than our awaited Savior and the Savior of all of humanity, Imam al-Mahdi, ajallahu ta'ala farajuhu sharif. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I want to try and unravel a dua that he himself has directly taught to us, and to see what characteristics the 12th Imam is looking for within you and I to be able to launch his movement. And you know, the movement of the 12th Imam is unique, and hopefully sometime in these nights we'll be able to touch upon the 12th Imam's revolution. Because sometimes we get this picture when we read articles or books or we watch videos on the internet that the Imam will come and he'll snap his fingers and everything will be pie in the sky. There'll be no problems. That he'll wave a magic wand over our heads and we'll all become good believers. Brothers and sisters, it's not that easy. It's not as easy as the Imam doing a miracle to change you and I. In fact, in one of the traditions which blew my mind when I heard it and when I read it, the tradition tells us, and I'll just paraphrase it, that when the advent of the Imam takes place, the hadith says that those who used to worship other than God, those who were idol worshippers, those who were people of a secular nature, materialists who were completely devoid of religion, that when the Imam makes his return, those people who were not on his side in that time of their life, they will switch from irreligiousness, from atheism, from agnosticism, and become his diehard followers. But the same hadith says that those who in the period of the occultation were firm on the teachings of the Imam, when he makes his return, guess what happens to them? They flip to the other side. They become the worshippers of the system, of the pharaonic, the demonic, the Dajjal system, whatever you want to call it. That we, not we in this room inshallah, not we as a community of believers, but we as somebody in the Muslim Ummah, we will actually change sides when the Imam returns. And we will follow what those who we are looking down upon today, we will become like those individuals. May God protect each and every one of us, including our spouses and children from that day. This is a reality. And so in these nights, I want to unravel the topic of reformation through supplication. how to reform ourselves, to prepare ourselves, our family, our community, our society, the non-Muslims around us, for the return of our 12th Imam. And we know it's not only the 12th Imam, because one of the key architects in the revolution of our Imam is Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, Isa ibn Maryam. And so this is a message as much for us as it is for the Christian community, because our Imam and the Messiah, Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, will unite forces and they will work together to bring about the kingdom of God upon this earth. And if we want to be a part of that movement, we want to join that train, we want to join that revolution. That revolution calls for internal reformation, for looking at ourselves with a critical eye, with looking at our practices as individuals, as a community, with a critical eye, to see, are we on the path or are we culturally inclined? Are we following the teachings of Ali Muhammad or are we following the teachings of our back home mentality? And when we're able to align our practical teachings with our belief system, then when the Imam makes his return, with the help of Prophet Jesus, we'll be able to walk into their ranks and be those who support and who assist and who work alongside of them to establish this government of justice upon the earth. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And so, as we begin, one of the things that we have to understand is that, and I want to just introduce the topic, inshallah, tonight and go through a bit of the preliminaries so that I can get that out of the way, so that tomorrow and the nights to come we can actually focus on some of the qualities that our 12th Imam is expecting from each and every one of us. And we're going to see, inshallah, just as in Karbala, that Sayyidina Shuhada had representation from all different strata of society. He had young men in his midst. He also had women within the support network. He had youth, he had seniors. He had people of all different backgrounds and categories. And inshallah, as we move forward, we'll see how we also fit into one of the pieces of the puzzle of our 12th Imam. But one of the things that we have to understand and appreciate before we go forth in this topic is when it comes to the self, to the nafs. You know, the nafs in itself is a difficult topic to speak about. Allah talks about the nafs in the Quran in so many different instances. He gives us an understanding of how we have different aspects of the nafs. We have this nafs, this part of our soul, which is recalcitrant. It wants to pull us towards sin. We have an aspect of ourselves which, when we do a negative action, it reprimands us. It tells us, you've done something wrong. And we have an aspect of ourself which is the pinnacle that we can reach to, where we are in full contentment and submission to our Creator. But one of the things that we have to appreciate as believers, and I don't say this to point to anyone, because I remember one of my teachers back in the day, they used to say that when you point a finger at somebody, three fingers are pointing back at you. So I don't say this to speak at you or against anybody. I'm speaking, inshallah, with all of you and to all of you, and as a reminder to myself, that each and every one of us, when we look ourselves in the mirror, we realize that all of us, because we're not infallible, we're not a part of that family of infallibility and protection. We all have little quirks within our life. We all have little shortcomings, things that we're trying to change in our day-to-day life. It may be a minor vice, or it may be something major. But Allah, in His beauty, the way He speaks in the Quran, He tells us in Surah Al-Qiyamah, which is in the latter part of the Quran, He says in a beautiful passage, He says, بَلَ الْإِنسَانُ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ بَصِيرًا وَلَوْ أَلْقَى مَعَذِيرًا. He tells us that you don't have to go to somebody for them to point out your flaws to you. You know, we're not like our Christian brethren who have to go to the priest and do confession and say, Father, forgive me, I have sinned, and he'll give you a thousand Hail Marys to you do, and this rosary and that rosary. We don't believe in that. It's haram, actually. It's forbidden. In our tradition, to go to anybody, go to your mullah, go to your sheikh, to go to the marja and say, I've done this and this sin. This is haram for us. So Allah tells us, what is the antidote? He says, بَلِ الْإِنسَانُ عَلَىٰ نَفْسِهِ بَصِيرًا. He says, you and I, we are the best person to judge our own shortcomings. وَلَوْ أَلْقَى مَعَذِيرًا. Although we try to put up excuses for ourselves. Well, I didn't really look at that girl in the mall. My eyes just happened to wander to that part of the mall or of the store. You know, I didn't want to listen to that, you know, sister backbiting another person, but you know, I was just in the vicinity and my ears picked up that noise. No, we unfortunately, we realize when we commit sins. And sometimes we as a collective, we try to justify it. Well, yeah, I talk bad about that person, but you know what? They deserved it. They're like this and that, and they don't care about their reputation, so why should I care about their rep? Right? I looked at that girl, scantily clad, but you know what? She doesn't care to cover herself up, so what sin is it on me? Allah tells us that we try to cover ourselves. We try to cover our own back. But Allah tells us that we are a witness over ourselves, even though we try to put up those excuses with Allah. But we realize that on the Day of Judgment, when the records are all shown, and all of the actions are made witness and present, that we won't have a leg to stand on. We can't tell Allah that, you know what, this happened and that happened. Because as we read in Surah Yasin, we say that on that day, our mouth will be sealed, and our hands will talk to Allah, and our feet will tell Allah what we used to do. So even if I am silent, my eyes will speak to Allah and say, I didn't want to look at that. But guess what? My owner made me look at that woman or that man. I didn't want to hear that haram music. But you know what? My owner made me listen to that haram music. And so we have to realize that we can't put up excuses for ourselves. That we have to take responsibility for our actions. And we have to obviously realize it before it's too late, and then work at rectification of the soul. There's a beautiful hadith that we have that comes to us from our sixth imam, Imam Ja'far ibn Muhammad as-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. And he explains this in a very poignant way, very thought-provoking tradition. He says the following. He says, indeed, you yourself, the human being, you have been made the physician over your own nafs. So we're not MDs, we're not a medical doctor, but we are spiritual doctors over ourselves. The sixth imam says, you are doctors over your own nafs, over your own self. He says, the sickness has been explained to you. So we know all of the spiritual maladies, or we know a lot of them. We've all gone to some form of a madrasa, of a Sunday school system. And if we haven't gone to a Sunday school, we have Sheikh Google to ask questions. We ask him and we get the answer. And so we have all of the sicknesses at the tips of our fingers, literally. So we ourselves are our own doctors. We know the ailments. He says, you've also been given knowledge of what will give you spiritual vitality. We know the cure. You know, we don't know the cure for cancer. We can't cure the Zika virus, but we can cure jealousy. We can cure envy. We can cure, you know, anything in terms of the spiritual world. Well, we know how to cure those sicknesses. He says, you've also been guided to what the medication is. What is the cure for these sicknesses? He says, so then each and every one of you need to watch over your own self. Again, it's not about me going to a spiritual doctor all the time. It's about me realizing that I'm a doctor in and of myself. I know the sicknesses. I know what the cure is. I know where it is. It just calls on me to go and get that prescription. Get it filled. Take that medication and cure myself. And this is, inshallah, where we will see the beauty of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them. They didn't leave us in the darkness. They didn't say we're going to, you know, that Allah put you on earth and 14 of us came and we're going to leave it up to you to figure this whole mess of a world out. No, they came with a purpose. When Sayyid al-Shuhada launches that revolution, he did it with a purpose and he documented it. It's in books today. It's in English and in our literature today. So we know what he did, what he said, where he went, every step that he went along that path, we know what he did today. And so we can't use the excuse, well, it's not available. I don't know. I never heard about it. I don't know where it is. Again, the answer is there. We know within ourselves what the sickness is. We know the antidote. We know where to find it. It's a matter that do we want to take it? And just like some medicine is bitter to swallow, sometimes Islam is bitter to swallow. It's not an easy faith. It's not an easy way of life. And I would be foolish to sit up here and say that it's easy. No, there are challenges in our religion when the entire society is going one way and we have to go against the current. When our respected sisters have to wear a hijab on their head and change their attitude as well, because hijab isn't just cloth, it's an attitude shift. It's a realignment of our priorities with the priorities of Ahlul Bayt. It's a difficult thing to do. For us men, we have it a bit easier. But when you have a Muslim name, your name is Muhammad, you're Ali, you're Hassan, you're Mahmoud, you're Ja'far. We have a challenge because now we have to swim against the current. We might not look the part, but we have characteristics within us that make us have to follow the religion of Islam. And again, the Ahlul Bayt have taught it to us. We need to go to their doorstep, take from them, and inshallah implement that within our lives to move forward towards the dhuhur of our 12th Imam, Imam Al-Hujjah, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajuhu Sharif. And so let me now go into a bit of this explanation or some of the details about this dua. The dua itself is again taught to us by our 12th Imam. It doesn't have a unique name though. You know, a lot of our du'as, we have a name for it. Month of Ramadan, we know we gather together and we do du'a iftata, right? We'll recite it or we'll watch it on a PowerPoint go in front of our eyes. Thursday night, we gather religiously. We read du'a kumail. It has a name to it. Du'a nudba, it has a name. It's known by something. But this du'a from our 12th Imam, and I was looking at many commentaries of it, and how our scholars introduce this supplication. And they tell us that this dua, the supplication, although taught to us by the 12th Imam, it doesn't really have a title for it. It doesn't have a name that you know it by. So we'll traditionally call it the supplication from the 12th Imam. And it begins, and I'm sure many of us know the dua. I know many of our children memorize it within the Sunday school system. It begins by a line which says, Allahumma rizukna tawfiqa ta'at. This, O Allah, give me the good fortune, the providence to be able to engage in your obedience. And it goes on and on within this dua. It's an interesting supplication in that it contains 27 different passages. How many? 27. 27 lines. It's very short if you think about it. It's not like dua kamail. It's not like dua Arafat that we recited 2 weeks ago that took an hour. This one, you can easily recite it within 3 or 4 minutes. Take a few minutes to read the translation in English or in Urdu or Gujarati, whatever language you're comfortable in. 27 passages. But what the 12th Imam does is very unique. It's very interesting. The first, let's say, quarter or one third of the dua, 11 lines, he focuses on the self, on you and I. Not on the community, not on the family, not on the society, but on the individual. 11 lines are just about us as human beings and what we have to strive for within our lives. Once the Imam gets those 11 points out of the way and he begins to bring an internal change within you and I, he then switches to the community on a whole. Various strata of our community, and he brings 16 different lines, 16 passages of how to work within a community, how different groups within a community need to shift their priorities, to change their outlook, to refocus and realign their priorities so that they're in line with the teachings of the Imam. And so we see in these 27 points, and we're not going to go through all of them obviously, I've chosen in chronological order from the beginning of the dua and tried to make it as a coherent flow of ideas to see how we can go from the self, from understanding ourself, into then working in a community setting. Again, not limited to one specific center or ethnic background, But as a community of believers, as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon all of them. And once we're able to fix the self, fix the community, then we can expect to go out into mainstream society and preach a message. Because if we ourselves don't understand or appreciate or accept it, then how do we expect to go out to outside of our center, from outside of these four walls, and convey a message when we ourselves are not people who are following the teachings and the ideology of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad, alayhum as-salatu was-salam. So we'll go over these, but let me just focus a bit now on the dua, on the word dua, and what is a dua? You know, this in itself is a topic that our scholars have literally written volumes about. What does it mean to make a dua? You know, we all do this, we'll make du'as after our prayers, we'll make du'as at certain times of the day, certain times of the year we'll make a du'a, but what actually is a du'a? You know, sometimes we imagine that we make a du'a to Allah, and that some miracle is going to happen. Oh Allah, make me rich. And then tomorrow we log in with our smartphone onto our banking app, and we see $1 million mysteriously deposited in our bank account. It doesn't work that easy. You know, sometimes our youth make dua, Ya Allah, help me find a pious spouse. You know, young men are looking for pious Muslim sisters to marry. Our sisters are trying to get married at a respectable age, and they make a dua. And what, you think that a man will just come at your doorstep? Obviously Allah doesn't work in that way. And in fact, the hadith tells us that Allah doesn't like to do things except through their natural means. He'll push things along. He can change the hearts of people. He can make things happen. But He wants to see you and I make the positive effort and change. The example that I like to give is in Dua Iftata, or the latter du'as. You know, there's a part of the collection of du'as that we recite in this menu of supplications in Ramadan, where we make this du'a, Allahumma adkhil ala ahli al-qubur as-surur, Allahumma aghni kulla faqir, Oh Allah, bring happiness to the people in the grave, and clothe the naked, and feed the hungry, and all of these things. But we don't expect Allah to do this, do we? Do we really expect Allah to go to the local prison and, you know, break open the jail cells and release all the prisoners? Allah doesn't do that. Allah won't feed the hungry. But what Allah will do is give you and I money, and He will say in the Quran, use what I have given you in the ways that I want you to use them. So Allah is saying, here's what you pray for. Now I make you my means, my intermediary. You do what I'm asking you to do, and now you fulfill that dua. So month of Ramadan, we say, for example, Allahumma aghni kulla faqir. Oh Allah, make every poor person free of need. If I see a poor person in my community and I'm well-to-do, maybe I can hire that person to give them a job in my company. Make them free of need by employing them. Maybe they need a microloan and I can finance them to go to school or to open a small business, or maybe they have an idea. Rather than going to one of those crowdsourcing websites, rather than going to Kickstarter, I can kickstart their own career. So Allah will use you and I to be the intermediaries of goodness within a society. And this dua is what we will see, that when the 12th Imam is teaching us 27 things to change in our way of living, it's not that Allah will push us to do these things, but rather that Allah will maybe make us be the impetus for somebody else to be able to make it on this path. Maybe Allah will open up an avenue, a door for us, that we would realize a responsibility and we will follow that within our lives. Maybe Allah will say that, you know what, I'm going to guide you to somebody who can help you, who is my wali, he's my authority on the earth. And this man or this woman will be your means to get a livelihood, to get a job, to get a young man or a woman in the community married. And Allah will use us as those pawns, so to speak, in a game. And He will move us around until we're able to actually be the force of change within a community, within a society. So brothers and sisters, dua doesn't mean that Allah will necessarily, you know, mysteriously do things, but He will guide us, He will push us, He will put a thought in our head that this is what we should be doing. This is what I should do. This is a talent that I have. And that hopefully we'll use that in the way that we make in those supplications. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And ultimately, as I mentioned in the beginning, it comes back to each and every one of us. We can't point the finger at other people. We have to do for ourselves, as individuals, as a community, and then as a congregation, and then move forward from there. And Allah points this in the Quran in many times. I'll just give you one example of the importance of taking care of our souls. Right? Because we realize as human beings that we're not just this physical body, we're something greater than just this shell that we have. We have a soul, we have something which makes us move. In chapter number 5, Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse 105, Allah tells us this importance. He says, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, alaykum anfusakum. O you who believe, take care of your own souls. Look after yourself. He says, La yadhurrukum man dhalla idha ihtadaytum. That when you're guided, when you're on a path, nobody can misguide you. Even the worst of people that comes to you, the worst of filth on the internet, the worst of corruption on satellite TV, once you are guided, once you're on a path, nobody can dissuade you from that path because now you are on a path of salvation. So Allah tells us to take care of ourselves. And this again becomes a understanding that we have. When you fly, for example, and they have that little security safety video that comes up, they'll tell you that before, or in the case of an emergency, if the oxygen mask drops, put on your own mask and then the people who you are taking care of. It's common sense. How can you take care of your family when you can't take care of yourself? How can a father be a father when he, you know, how can he be a father to his children when he can't take care of himself? How can a mother be a mother to her daughter or her son when she is not taking care of her own nafs? So when we take care of ourselves, then we're able to go and take care of our family, our children, our community. And then again, we can be expected to go forth into our societies and again, bring out this revolution of change within our society and be instruments of being people of ambassadors, of bringing a message of goodness to all of the humanity. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And so let me end this part of the juncture of our discussion for tonight. And to remind us that as we go forward from tomorrow onwards, we're going to analyze this supplication of the Imam. And we're not going to do a very comprehensive analysis because time obviously doesn't permit. And obviously if we were to go into more detail, we just wouldn't have an opportunity. But we will try to highlight some of the important facts in the dua, and how our great scholars have commented and given us understandings of how to understand and implement the supplication within our lives. And we'll see through the natural progression, as the dua will carry us forward, that inshallah each and every one of us will be able to board that ark of salvation, which is known as Hussein. We will be able to look ourselves in the mirror and say that I have a defect, I have a blemish, and I'm going to change it through the teachings of our 12th Imam. I'm going to make a positive change within my life. I'm not going to be judgmental of others. I'm going to look at myself. And I'm going to look at how I can change one aspect. If we leave these sessions, brothers and sisters, after Ashura, even having changed one characteristic of ourself, we've done enough for that period. We've done enough to get on that path of getting close to the Ark of Hussein. We've done enough for that time period to at least now move forward and to begin to continue that movement within ourselves and again extend that out to our family and our community and our society. Let me, for the last few minutes, take us back to Karbala in the year 60 after the migration, as that time that Sayyidul Shuhada was in Medina and he received the news of the death of Muawiyah. Sayyidul Shuhada alayhi salam, our beloved Imam Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam, he received the news of the death of Muawiyah when he was in Medina. And he said those words that we all repeat when somebody dies. It says, "Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un." Indeed, we are all from Allah. The good, the bad, the saint, the sinner, we're all from Allah. And inna ilayhi raji'un, we all go back to Allah at the end of the day. It doesn't matter who we are in the spiritual hierarchy or the lower depths. We're all going back to Allah. He made this statement and he realized in the few days that followed that a movement was taking foot. There were messages coming from Damascus, from Sham, from the appointed caliph, the so-called caliph of the Muslim Ummah, who was a self-appointed, a self-proclaimed stylist of government, that he gave a message to his governors of the Muslim land, and most specifically of the governors in Medina. Yazid, la'anu ta'ala alayhi, gives a message to his governors that I want you to extract the oath of allegiance from the Muslims of Medina in particular. Because Medina was a hot spot, it was the grave of Rasulullah. Muslims would all be in Medina, they would all long to go to the grave of Rasulullah, to sit at the grave of the Messenger of God. And they knew that if you could convince by force or by any way, by any means necessary, to take the oath of allegiance from Medina, the people of Medina, then you could take the whole Muslim Ummah. Because they were sheep being led to the slaughter, literally. And so the cursed Yazid sends a message that take the oath of allegiance from the people of Medina, but specifically four or five individuals. And one of those five or four individuals was none other than Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. Imam Hussein receives this message that Muawiyah has left this world and that now his allegiance is being sought. And he was given an ultimatum. It's either your hand in allegiance or your head. There's no two ways about it. Either your hand or your head. And Sayyid al-Shuhada makes a beautiful, poignant statement that day. He says that what would happen to the Muslim Ummah, what will befall the Muslim Ummah when Yazid, the cursed Yazid, and he begins to list his negative qualities. He says this is a man who breaks every law of Islam. He openly consumes alcohol. He kills innocent people with no regard for innocent life. He does every single sin known in the book and even then some. He says, what can it be when a man like me gives allegiance to somebody like him? He says that it's impossible. He says, لا يباي مثلا مثلي لا يباي مثلا. One like Hussein would never give allegiance to one like Yazid. He wasn't making it a clash of personalities. It wasn't Hussein against Yazid. Sometimes historians say this was a clash of two princes. May God protect us from such a twisted ideology. It wasn't about this and that. It wasn't about two men. It was about ideology. It was that a man like Hussein could never pledge allegiance to a man like Yazid. It was Rasulullah never pledging allegiance to people like Abu Sufyan. It was like Amir al-Mu'mineen never pledging allegiance to those at his time. It was like the 12th Imam not pledging allegiance to the governments and the ideologies when he makes his return. Sayyid al-Shuhada in these days, in the months that lead up in the month of Rajab, and as he begins this movement, he begins in the city of Medina. He realizes that this is a movement which is too big, it's too powerful, it's too strong. It can't be limited to just Medina. He begins to collect many of his family members. Certain companions are given the go-ahead to join him on this caravan. They realize that this is the end of it. They're not going to come back to Medina. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we're told in the books of Maqtal, that as he's beginning to leave Medina, he goes to four or five homes five places in Medina. The historians mention that one of the first places that our Mawla goes to is the grave of Rasulullah. He goes to the beautiful perfumed grave of Rasulullah. He sits at the foot of his grandfather Rasulullah. He begins to sit and lament at the foot of the grandfather. Historians don't really give us an exact detailed account of what Imam Hussein was saying to his dear grandfather. Obviously, we can't even comprehend the emotional state that Imam Hussein was in. Whatever was said was between the grandfather and the son and the grandson. He then departs from Rasulullah's grave. He goes towards Jannatul Baqi. He makes those heavy footprints, heavy steps towards Jannatul Baqi. He sits at the grave of his beloved brother Imam Hassan. He begins to probably lament. He begins to open his heart to his brother Hassan, the one who had been poisoned just a few years before this event. He leaves the grave of his beloved brother Imam Hassan. He makes one last stop at one last grave. That's the grave of his dear mother Bibi Fatima alayhi salam. The dear mother Bibi Fatima, who had gone through so many difficulties. The mother who had been pushed between the door and the wall. The one who lost her son Mohsen. The one whose ribs had been crushed on that fateful day. He sits at the grave of his beloved mother. We can only imagine what kind of a discussion Sayyidul Shuhada would have with his dear mother. Going, leaving him for good, that he knows he'll never be in the company and to be, receive the benefactions and the blessings of his mother from after this day. Imam Hussein then goes to two final houses in the city of Medina. He goes to his half-brother Muhammad al-Hanafiya. He goes to his brother, half-brother Muhammad al-Hanafiya. He gets some advice. At this point, brothers and sisters, Imam Hussein gives his last will and testament. He lets you and I know why he was making this revolution. He clearly tells Muhammad al-Hanafiya, he says, I'm not making this revolution. I'm not going forth to create corruption in the ummah, to spread mischief or create any corruption. He says that I'm trying to bring about rectification in the ummah of my grandfather. I want to encourage good and forbid the evil. And in this mission, I'm working and following in the footsteps of my grandfather Rasulullah and my father Ali ibn Abi Talib. He departs from Muhammad al-Hanafiya and he goes to one last home in Medina. This is the home of the beloved wife of the Prophet Ummul Mu'mineen, Umm Salama. He goes to Umm Salama, the beloved wife of Rasulullah. He goes and he greets her as the mother of the faithful. He gives Umm Salama a bit of dirt from Karbala. Umm Salama goes to a part in her house. Umm Salama had been given dirt by Rasulullah. And the Rasulullah told Umm Salama, he told her that when you see this dirt turn to blood, know that my Hussein has been killed in Karbala. Imam Hussein gives this dirt to the beloved Umm al-Mu'mineen. He says, Ya, O my mother, he says, mix this dirt that I'm giving you with the dirt that my grandfather gave you from Karbala. He says, keep an eye on this dirt because the time will come very shortly that this dirt will turn into blood. And when this dirt turns to blood, no one realized that your Hussein has been killed on the plains of Karbala, that your Hussein is no longer, that your Hussein has left this world to meet his eventual creator. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّ لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ مَاتَمَ حُسَيْنَ.
کیسا محرم آیا کربلا अल्लाह वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, जैसे जैसे मेरे गाजी का आलम झुकता गया, जैसे जैसे मेरे गाजी का आलम झुकता गया, पुश्त में हजरत शबीर की भी खम आया, खून टपकता हुआ अब्बास का परचम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, करबला देख ले इस्लाम बचाने के लिए, करबला देख ले इस्लाम बचाने के लिए, साथ कुन बे को लिए वारिस आदम आया, खून टपकता हुआ अब्बास का परचम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, जालिमो इसको तो दो घूंट पिला दो पानी, जालिमो इसको तो दो बूंद पिला दो पानी, अब लबों पर मेरे बेशीर का है दम आया, खून टपकता हुआ अब्बास का परचम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, सारे मौसम तो गुजर जाते हैं आके लेकिन, सारे मौसम तो गुजर जाते हैं आके लेकिन, बस हमेशा के लिए मौसम मातम आया, खून टपकता हुआ अब्बास का परचम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, करबला वालों पे ये कैसा मुहर्रम आया, हुसैन या हुसैन या हुसैन या हुसैन या हुसैन या हुसैन, ए चांद मुहर्रम के तू बदली में चला जा, चांद मुहर्रम के तू बदली में चला जा, तुझे देख के मर जाए ना, तुझे देख के मर जाए ना, बीमार है सुगरा, बदली में चला जा, चांद मुहर्रम के तू बदली में चला जा, घर सहारा का लुटने की खबर तूने सुनाई, तुझे देख के रोती है मुहर्रम में खुदाई, चौदह बीते, चौदह सौ बरस बीते, सब कर شکوہ ہے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا ہے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا ہے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا ملنے کے لیے بھائی کو بے چین بڑی ہے کب سے علی اکبر کی یہ راہوں میں کڑی ہے بچھڑی ہے یہ مدت سے بچھڑی ہے یہ مدت سے اسے تو نہ نظر آ بدلی میں چلا جا اے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا اے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا بھیا کی جدائی میں پریشان ہے رہتی ہر روز نانا کو رو رو کے ہے کہتی اکبر نہ ملا نانا اکبر نہ ملا نانا میں مر جاؤں گی تنہا اے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا اے چاند محرم کے تو بدلی میں چلا جا یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین
محمد وآل محمد صلوات توجہ زیارت
السلام علیکہ یا مولا یا رسول اللہ السلام علیکہ یا مولا یا امیر المؤمنین السلام علیک یا مولاتی یا فاطمت الزہرا سیدتی نساء العالمین السلام علیک یا حسن المصطبیٰ السلام علیک یا ابا عبد اللہ الحسین وعلی الارواح التی حلت بفنائک علیکم منی جمیعا سلام اللہ ابدا ما بقیت و بقی اللیل و النہار ولا جعل الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي ابن الحسين وعلى اولاد الحسين وعلى اصحاب الحسين جميعا ورحمه الله وبركاته السلام عليك يا غريب الغرباء السلام علیک یا معین الضعفاء والفقراء السلام علیک یا سلطان علی ابن موسی رضا کن شفیعنا و شفیع والدینا فی یوم الجزاء و رحمت اللہ و برکاتہ السلام علیک یا حجت اللہ ابن الحسن یا صاحب الزمان السلام علیک یا خلیفۃ الرحمن السلام علیک یا شریک القرآن السلام علیک یا امام الانس والجان عجل اللہ تعالی فرجک وسہل اللہ مخرجک وظہورک ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ الفاتحہ